I struck camp 30 miles from Kansas City and waited 4 days in the woods while Jack, my invisible friend, rode in and did some snooping around. We hadn't heard from mysterious Dave Mather in over a year. I decided to find out why. To tell the truth, I was hoping Jack might come back with some word about Janine Wilcox, though I didn't mention it to him. Jack said he would be back in 3 days, so on the fourth day I started getting a little jumpy. I'd started readying my 6-horse string for a move farther into the woods when Jack came riding in leading 2 more horses. He smelled like the upstairs of the Lucky Lady Saloon.
I hope you didn't hurry back here on my account.
Jack's eyes were bloodshot and he was shaking like a hound passing peach seeds. I could tell he was hungover sick.
Don't give me no guff. I might have fooled around a little, but it was all in the course of gathering information.
I followed him to the coffee pot on the campfire.
What information is that? What happened to Mather? Any word on Zanone? Did you happen to hear anything about the Wilcoxes?
Jack held the cup with both hands and lowered his face to it.
You do carry on a lot, you know that?
I walked over to the new horses. There's no talking to a hangover. In a few minutes, Jack came up and leaned on a horse's rump as I inspected its hooves.
They run Mather out of town over a year ago. He's plumb over in Arizona working for the Earp brothers.
Well, I reckon we'll hear from him sooner or later. He ain't gonna make much working for the Earps. From what I know of them, they're tighter than a young whore's bed springs. Any other news?
Yeah, and you ain't gonna like it. Daniel Zanone is now the sole owner of the Midwest Security and Detection Agency.
I'll be damned. How'd you come by that?
I learned it from our old buddy Melvin Bracker. He never put it together that I was with you on that racing scheme. We drank together, played a little poker, just like we was old friends. Of course, he was mostly just seeing if I knew anything about you. I told him what a no-good skunk bastard I thought you was, and that I heard you got killed and skinned at Powder River. Oh, and I also found out that old man Wilcox hung himself less than a year ago. According to Bracker, they found him hanging from a raptor in his breeding barn, deader than a stump.
Jesus.
I was glad to hear he was dead, but I worried about the grief it must have caused Janine. I felt a sudden urge to go to her, but I knew it couldn't be.
Did you hear anything about Jeannie? I mean, how she's doing and all?
Yeah. She's married. Got a husband and a child.
Wonder how the hell she managed that. Best I remembered, she's still my wife. On paper, anyway.
Then maybe you ought to ride in there and explain all this to a judge. Jesus, if I had known you was going to act so small about this.
Let up, Jack. These are scars that ain't healed. I reckon I wasn't ready to hear it. It just don't set right. She's still my legal wife.
And all these years, while she's been your wife, you've been living with little China, so there.
Well, it ain't the same thing.
There ain't a bit of difference. You've got a half an hour to work this stuff out of your mind. Because I ain't riding up north with an ass-kicking hangover watching you sulk around like a love-struck cowboy.
Jack sat down by the fire.
Feel like hell. You know, as horses go, Kansas City has been overblessed.
I looked at Jack, offered a weak smile, and sat down on the other side of the fire.
So, you think the widow woman is crazy because she was going to stab you with a butcher knife?
Jack stood up, dusting the seat of his trousers.
Yep, that's the way I see it. What do you think?
I stood up and put out the fire with my boot.
Nah, I think she's crazy because she didn't finish the job.
We've got big trouble coming.
Jack was staring through the field lenses.
Look at this.
I was across a dry creek bed in 3 steps and up the bank where Jack lay covered by underbrush. He held the telescope in place as I slid down beside him.
Oh, no, it's gone to hell.
At 1,000 yards, I saw 4 riders rounding a bend from behind a low rise. Then in seconds, 200 yards behind them and closing, I saw 12 other riders. Jesse led the 4 riders at a hard run. Right behind him, Frank had his gray stallion belly down and holding to the reins of Clell Miller's horse as it pounded beside him. Clell wobbled in the saddle like a drunken man. 10 yards back, Cole and Jim Younger rode double. Jim hung against Cole's back like a fading shadow. Even through the fog lens, I could see they were shot to pieces.
They've had it.
I slapped the lens shut and ran to the creek bed. Jesse would be expecting us to catch up to them on the run.
We've all had it. Cut out the best 5 and turn the others loose.
Jack had already started chopping the lead rope with his Glades knife as the horses jumped and pulled against him. We had brought in a 10-horse string, exactly the number we needed. From what I saw through the lens, half our gang was either dead or captured. From the looks of Clell Miller and Jim Younger, they wouldn't last long. I grabbed the reins of two horses as I jumped into the saddle and drew my rifle. A spun buck toward Jack. Jack gathered three horses and shooed the other five away. At that second, I realized we were all gonna die in the flatlands of Minnesota. I leaned out to Jack as he swung up in his saddle. Maybe you ought to wait here. Jack rolled his eyes and tightened his hat.
All right, but if I go down, don't stop for me.
I'm not planning to, so watch your ass.
We tore up the middle of the creek bed for 20 yards, then veered up over the bank onto the flatland. This kind of job was a horseman's nightmare. We all knew it could happen, and we always planned for it, but we all prayed against it. When we hit the flatland in full view, Buck sprang past Jack's big bay by 4 or 5 yards. Jesse and the boys were 300 yards away and running parallel to us, with the posse closing hard. Between us lay nothing but a flat, bare stretch of land. On the other side of Jesse and the boys lay a maple forest 20 yards up a low rise. Frank and Jesse saw us tearing across the flatland and cut sharp for the woods. At the same time, the posse saw what we were trying to do, and six riders split off toward us. All we could do was cut straight for the woods as rifle fire spit past us. Jack and I were like tin ducks at a county fair. I swung my rifle across the front of me. Suddenly, a tip of Buck's ear disappeared, and blood sprayed me in the face. Oh! I glanced back just in time to see Jack and the four horses tumbling end over end in a tangle of limbs, hooves, and chunks of dirt. Instinctively, I cut a sharp left and circled back for him. Jack staggered to his feet in the midst of the thrashing animals. His face was covered with blood. As a volley tore into the struggling horses, I jolted to a halt, swinging the two-horse string around between me and Jack. I leaned out across one horse's back. Jack groped at the horse's mane as I snatched him by his bloody head and pulled up.
Damn it, Jack! Grab something!
Jack rolled up on the horse's back. I felt the white flash of pain slap into my hip and saw Jack's shirt puff out in front as a bullet tore through his shoulder, then a bullet slapped into his side. We pounded across the flatland, Jack clinging to one of the two horses, me leading them at a hard run. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the six riders lined up and taking a slow, steady aim. Up ahead and 50 yards to our left, the rest of the posse had dropped down and taken position in a plug wash beside the road facing the woods. Just as I thought I was about to feel the sting of death, I saw puffs of smoke from the woods line. The boys had taken position. They'd covered us. The suddenness and accuracy of the rifles from the woods stunned the posse for a second, but only a second. Oh! We topped the road and pounded into the woods. I shoved Jack from his horse and dove to the ground beside him. Buck and the other two horses ran on through the woods. They stopped as gloved hands reached from within a grove of maples and caught their reins. I crawled toward the shelter of the trees, dragging Jack beside me. Blood spread across my back and down my hip, but I knew I wasn't hit bad. Jack had taken a bad one through the shoulder and another in the side. I didn't know what had hit him before the fall. Near the grove, when the firing let up, Jesse came running out in a crouch. With his rifle pointing from his right hand, he reached down and pulled Jack with his left. I saw the spread of blood on Jesse's chest.
Are you hit?
No.
We collapsed into the shelter of the trees.
But everybody else is.
The scene in that tiny clearing was one of tortured demons straight out of hell. Rifle smoke lay heavy in a slow, drifting cloud, and wide trails of blood ran in all directions. Frank held the reins of Buck and the two fresh horses in his good hand and leaned against a tree. Blood ran down his other hand and dripped steady to the ground. The spent horses milled in the clearing, carefully stepping among the wounded and dying.
Jesus Christ!
I limped the coal and helped him as he dragged himself away to a pile of downed timber. Jesse had propped Jack against a tree trunk and laid a rifle across his lap.
Leave him alone. Can't you see he's dead?
No, not Jack.
I dropped from a bad leg and crawled to him quickly. I shook him.
Jack, damn it. Jack, you ain't dead.
Jack's eyes barely opened.
See, by God, don't start calling us dead till we are dead.
Oh, hell, I've been hit by a freight train.
Can you shoot?
Frank spun the horse's reins around a tree limb with his good hand and jumped over against Jesse, knocking him to the ground.
He's dying, damn it. Leave him be.
Jesse rolled among the horse's hooves. He clutched his chest and crawled back to Frank. He grabbed Frank by his trouser legs and tried to pull himself up.
See? You're no help at all. None at all.
Frank reached down and helped Jesse to his feet.
Keep Clell quiet.
Frank and I limped between the horses and helped Clell to the pile of timber next to Cole. In a few seconds, we had the wounded against the downed timber. Cole propped himself up on his shoulder and stared at the woods like a trapped and wounded panther. Blood and saliva ran down and dripped from his chin in a long, stringy froth. Beside him, his brother Jim lay flat. His legs jerked and quivered. He'd been shot straight through the face. The bullet left his cheekbone split open in a large bloody welt and tore a hole through his neck right at the collar.
Somebody finish me. Please. Please shoot me.
Why don't somebody shoot him so he'll shut the hell up?
Cole drug his pistol from his holster with all his effort and flopped it on his lap.
Go for my brother, and I'll drop you like a gob of snot.
Good timing, Cole.
I took a bottle of whiskey from Clell's saddlebags and cradled his head in my lap as he drank it.
Oh, Lord. Dingus, nothing ever hurt this bad.
I know, but we're here with you. You'll be all right.
Look at this.
Frank spun around and the two of them stared out into the woods. I stayed with Clell.
What is it?
Some Jake leg is waving a white handkerchief.
It's about time they surrendered. They must have just realized we got the badass James boys and Mr. Hotshot Smith in here.
You're trapped in there. There's no way out. If you give it up, we promise not to kill you.
Can you imagine the nerve?
If you all drop your guns and back away, we promise you the same courtesy.
We know you're shut up awfully bad in there. You better think it over.
You too.
Well, that's good. Who's in there anyway? Is that Jesse and Frank, James?
Rotten assholes.
God dingus. I can see the devil. He's running his fingers through my guts and dragging me down.
Hang on, Clell.
See him? See him? Here he comes. Oh, oh my God. Mama. Tell Jesse I'm sorry.
I slipped from beneath his head and limped between the horses. Our friend Clell danced with the angels.
Come in and see who's here.
We will, if you don't surrender in a few minutes.
How many minutes?
10 minutes.
It's Cole Younger.
We jerked around and stared at Cole. He looked straight at Jesse and nodded his head solemnly.
That's right.
You sure about this?
You bet your ass. And Jim Younger. And Clell Miller. Look at these.
Cole pointed from one bullet hole to the next.
One here, another here and here. One here. All these bullet holes. More than the James brothers put together, I bet.
Jesse stepped toward him with the rifle hanging from his hand.
What are you saying, Cole?
I'm saying there ain't one of you bastards I want with me in prison. Now get out of here. I'm tired of looking at you.
I switched the blood-soaked saddle and bridle from poor Clell's horse and hastily slapped it on one of the fresh ones as Frank and Jesse bent down to Cole. I led Buck and the other horse carefully over Cole and Jim, rolled Jack up and tied him to the saddle. Jesse leaned in close to Cole.
You know, I wouldn't have this happen for...
Yeah, I know.
I would sooner be me lying there.
I know. Just get the hell away.
5 minutes?
They weren't too keen on charging in if they could avoid it. They knew who was in here, knew it clear as day. They had cornered the boys. It was kind of like grabbing a wildcat by the ass. Jesse crept past me and took the reins to one of the fresh horses. Frank took the other in his good hand. When we mounted, Jesse motioned for me and Jack to ride southwest toward Mankato. Evening was running out of color. I glanced one last time around that tiny clearing. It smelled of smoke, blood, sweat, defecation, and sickness. Clell's face and hands were already turning blue. As Jesse and Frank slipped into the woods like ghosts, I watched Cole stare after them like an old man watching a shooting star. His eyes clung to them long after they were gone. I led Buck and Jack's horse quietly through the woods. Jack lay on his horse silent as stone.
Your time's up! We're coming in! Better give us just a few more minutes! All right, we will.
For 3 full days, we stuck to the creek beds and plug washes and worked our way southwest. From woodland to woodland, crossing the flatland only of a night, we slipped past or laid still and avoided the bands of riders, bounty hunters, and posses who roamed the area like bloodthirsty hounds. By the third evening, Jack's face was yellow as parchment, and I knew if I didn't get him some help, he would die strapped to the back of his horse. He was too weak to argue as I led his horse to the front gate of a farmhouse somewhere past Mankato. I'd watched the house for over an hour. There was an old man, a younger woman, and a young boy. When I figured they had settled in for supper, I decided to take a chance.
Hello, the house!
We don't want no trouble here! We heard who you are!
I was bone-tired and weak from hunger. The graze across my back had dried my shirt to my skin. Jack hadn't stirred for the longest time. He might have been dead for all I knew.
I don't want trouble either. I could have killed you an hour ago from the woods if I wanted to. I just need some help here, that's all.
Is that your brother Frank?
As tired and hurt and hungry as I was, I still couldn't help but smile.
Here we go again.
But you don't look at all like your picture.
Jack was propped up on a large pillow being fed soup.
Well, Flora, you know how pictures lie.
She nodded in agreement and held out another spoonful of soup. Old Henry stared at me from across the wooden table.
But you do, except for the long hair and the beard. I never seen a picture of you with a beard. Not that I would try to identify you later on.
He still wasn't convinced that we wouldn't kill them all before we left. We'd holed up with them for over 2 weeks. I was getting restless. I scratched at my beard and tapped my finger on the newspaper in front of me. 3 days before, I'd sent the young boy into town to get the paper. Before he left, I told him we would kill his mother and grandpa if he didn't do as he was told. It was a terrible thing to say. I'd apologize to old Henry later on, but I reckon he was still concerned. According to the newspaper, Charlie Pius, Clarence Height, and Clell Miller were all dead. We later learned that Bob Younger was still alive and had been captured in Northfield. Cole and Jim Younger had surrendered to the posse and were taken back to Northfield for medical attention. Cole denied that Frank and Jesse James had any involvement in the raid, but the paper and the local authorities claimed otherwise. Members of the posse said that Frank, Jesse, and 2 unnamed members of the gang had slipped through a circle of deputies and made a getaway. Jesse and Frank had been spotted in 4 other states and as far south as Georgia within 3 days of the raid. I figured by now they were actually holed up somewhere near Kearney. In another part of the paper, it referred to Cole Younger as the Gentleman Bandit. With 11 bullets in him, that arrogant bastard stood up in the wagon and tipped his hat to the ladies as they hauled him into town. I reckon it was his way of showing us he would go out in style. He knew we would read about it. By the time Jack was up and around, we'd been hiding out with the Federman family for near a month. The day we rode out, Flora stood by Jack's horse for nearly half an hour, moony-eyed as a schoolgirl. I reckon she lived out the rest of her life thinking she'd had a love affair with Frank James. I'd call old Henry to the side, and though he argued against it, I made him take $300 for providing us refuge. I think he was truly surprised we didn't kill them. The young boy, Kendall, came up and asked me to sign the newspaper for him. It was probably old Henry's idea. I ruffled his hair and told him it might not be a good idea, but then I gave him a 3-inch pocket knife, and that seemed to satisfy him. With a bag of food and 3 bottles of homemade wine, we rode off into the woods. That night, we risked a small fire deep in the woods and sat down to a plate of beans and hot coffee. The hunt for the James gang had died down, but we would have to worry about bounty hunters and local lawmen all the way back to Missouri.
What do you think will become of us now?
I don't know. With so many dead or in jail, I figure Jesse's gonna have to let down and take in some new faces. And I don't like that a bit.
Well, there's the Ballard brothers from down in Arkansas. And the Fords, oh, they're assholes. But at least Jesse knows them.
Jack, you ever thought about getting out?
No, it ain't likely we'll ever get out. What the hell would we do?
Do? We could do whatever we want. I got horses. We both got money stashed.
Not me. I ain't got nothing stashed away.
You mean you've run through all the money we've made over the years?
Every dime of it.
What the hell have you spent it on?
This, that, and the other. Hell, it's bad luck to hang on to money. You ought to know that.
No, I don't know that. It's bad luck not to.
Suit yourself. The only money we ever have is through far-handedness. It's bad luck to hang on to that kind of money. You're supposed to spend it as quick as you make it.
Jack wrapped a blanket around himself and leaned back against his saddle.
Besides, don't you think it would look awful puny quitting Jesse right now, after Northfield going sour on us?
I pitched the rest of my beans into the fire and sipped at a cup of coffee. Lately, I was finding myself agreeing with Jack a little too often. While Jack slept, I sat wrapped in a blanket and stared into the low flames. There, a long way from home, healing from my wounds and hidden among those tall northwestern pines, I did some deep and solemn thinking with both my mind and my heart as well. It was time I faced up to what I really was and try to find a way to change it. No matter how I colored the picture beneath the trimmings, I was a hunted, wanted man, a murderer, thief, and far-handed desperado. I was reaching way down to admit to it. There was nothing to justify my being in this world, killing and robbing and watching men die. The voice I heard from the posse was the voice of a plain dirt farmer, no different than my pa. That's why they hadn't charged in on us. They had no taste for blood, no craving for the taking of lives. They were there protecting what little they'd scraped together by the sweat of their backs. We were there to steal it, plain and simple. I felt low. Back in Missouri, I had a decent spread, a woman who loved me, and more money laid up than any of that posse would see in a lifetime. At least poor old Clell and the others were there because they needed the money. That was honest enough in a backhanded sort of way. I wasn't even honest with my own kind. In Kentucky, I owned as fine a spread of horse country as a man could dream of. And I'd kept it a secret even from my friends, even from Jack, even from Little China. In Kentucky, I was Jim Beatty. I reckon Jim Beatty was better than the boys, though he'd gathered his trappings at the end of a gun, no different than the rest. He wouldn't spit on the likes of Miller Crow, yet here sat Miller Crow feeding into the charade that kept both men alive. Who the hell was I? And what the hell was I doing stealing money, spilling blood, and tearing innocent lives apart? We had followed the Platte over into Nebraska, then trekked south across Kansas into Abilene. We could lose ourselves in the scores of faceless drovers, wild-eyed cattlemen, who filed back and forth steadily between Texas and Kansas City. We would drop down from Abilene into the Indian Nations. From there, we would drift into Missouri through the back door. That night, after traveling near the herd all day, we rode into the cattle camp at supper time and tied our horses near the string of cow ponies. Though it was a custom among the drovers to feed any wayfarers at the evening meal, out of courtesy, Jack and I walked over to the trail boss before taking our plates from our saddlebags. When we approached the circle of cowhands, sprawled around the campfire, an older feller, stocky as an oak stump, pushed up to his feet and slapped dust from his trousers.
You the boys who've been riding south of us all day?
The cowboys just nodded at us, too tired to care.
That's us. I'm Bob Kelly. This here's Callahan.
Jack tipped his hat.
Was that your first or your last name?
That's my whole name. First name Calla, last name Han.
Well, I'll be damned. I'm Rhodes Blanchard. Draw off some of them beans and join us.
Much obliged.
We walked back to our horses, got our eating utensils, and returned to the campfire.
How's your drive been?
I sat down and spooned up some beans. Jack eased down a few feet away.
Well, hard, but fair.
Blanchard stared at me with a curious look on his face.
Have I seen you before, Mr. Kelly?
I sucked some warm gruel from my finger and chewed on a mouthful of beans. The herd lowed in the near distance. Two riders reined in, and I heard the rattle of tin plates.
Not that I recall. We're from Arkansas, been up in Colorado looking at some land.
That's mighty pretty country up there. Damned if you don't remind me of somebody, but I can't say who. Chank, don't he look familiar as hell?
The long-jawed cowboy glanced over his shoulder at me, then the whole group looked my way.
He sure does.
He stared with his mouth dropped open. The rest of the bunch shifted around and stared as if trying to place a name to a face.
I always say it looks just like Jesse James. Of course, he don't like me saying it.
I'm damned if he don't look like old Jesse, don't he, Shank?
The whole group conferred among themselves, nodding their heads.
Sure does. He damn sure does.
By God, it is Jesse James.
Jack slapped his holster as if to draw. The cowboys jerked in surprise. Then Jack reached over and tugged my hat down on my forehead.
I tipped my hat back and shook my head, still chewing on beans.
You're full of bull, Calla.
Why, by heavens, that ain't nothing a man ought to be ashamed of. You ought to consider it a compliment.
Well, you're sure right about that. I ain't ashamed of it at all.
No, sir.
Who ain't ashamed of what?
Two latecomers stepped in among us. They stood above us, spooning up beans. Blanchard gestured a stubby finger toward a young man.
Yeah, this here's my boy, Gant. This is Bob Kelly and Callahan.
The young feller just nodded.
We just was a-talking about how much Kelly here looks like Jesse James, don't you think?
Not a bit. Jesse James is clean-faced and well-barbered. Anybody knows that.
Oh, son, we was just making talk about it, that's all.
Whatever become of that bunch? Last we heard, they've been shot to pieces robbing a bank up north.
That's true. We heard of it on our turnaround trip from Kansas City. The group of detectives rode in searching for the James boys and a couple of other fellas. They wanted me to round in my whole crew so they could look them over. Phew, I told them to go kiss their sisters. I don't have time for that, Guff. Besides, far as I care, the James boys ain't done a thing that I wouldn't do myself if I was a younger man.
Pa rode with them back in the war, didn't you, Pa?
Well, kind of. You know how it is in a war. You ride with fellers for a while, and then you go on.
Sure do. Back then, everybody knew everybody else, I reckon.
I would ride with them today, just like Pa did, if I knew how to join up with them.
You hush up. You've got plenty to do right here.
Was that the Pinkerton detectives?
Nah, this was Dan Zanone and his bunch. Sons of bitches. I wouldn't piss in his ear if his brains were blazing. He told Shank here to put the word out that he was gunning for the James boys, and especially their horseman, Miller Crow.
I've heard of him. I'd heard he got skinned and gunned over in Powder River.
I've heard that Crow feller was a no-good bastard. I heard he would spit in a clean kitchen.
Oh, yeah? And I think it takes a dirty, cowardly bastard to badmouth any of the boys.
No offense intended.
How do we know you two ain't more of them damn detectives sneaking around here?
Easy now, young man.
I leaned toward Rhodes Blanchard and stared deep in his eyes.
We're the wrong kind of people for your boy to be cutting his teeth on. I lay three fingers to my forearm and nodded. You know what I'm saying?
A realization swept across Rhodes Blanchard's face. He'd raised his son on stories of blood and gunpowder. Now his stories had come to life and were staring him in the face.
Gant, stop right now and get on out of here. You hear me, son? Do you hear me?
Gant Blanchard ignored him. Jack finished his coffee in a long gulp, not taking his eyes off Gant Blanchard for a second.
Please, son, listen to me. You don't know what you're fooling with here.
The young fella reached out a boot and tapped his toe against Jack's holster.
That's a .36 caliber LaFourchette, ain't it?
Jack shot me a glance as he stood slowly and dusted his trousers. I knew he was going out of his way to avoid a fight when he turned his back on the boy and looked out across the herd.
Yes, it is.
Jack had taken the fancy gun from his saddlebags and started wearing it after losing his .44 back at Northfield. He'd only used it for practice. He called it his drawing pistol.
Only gunslingers, bounty hunters, and railroad detectives carry that kind of gun. Which are you?
Neither.
You're a liar.
No! No!
Old man Blanchard was ready to jump between Jack and his son. I held out my hand, stopping him. Since Jack hadn't already killed the kid, I thought there was a good chance he wouldn't.
Let's go.
We started toward the horses. Jack, with his back to young Blanchard, and I kind of walking sideways with my arms spread in a cautious show of peace.
I'm calling you a yellow liar.
I've been called worse.
But turn around.
Keep walking.
Turn and face me or I'll blow the back of your head off.
I'll have to kill him, you know. Want to hear that gun cock? I'll have to drop him.
Don't do it.
Try not. Let's see how it goes.
Four more yards and we would have made it to our horses.
Jesus!
Quick as a hornet, Jack's gun flashed as he spun around. Young Blanchard stood still as stone, his face white and bloodless, his eyes bulged out like a stomped frog. Beside him, his pistol lay broken in the dirt. Blood poured back his raised arm and ran in a stream from his elbow to the ground. His hat hit the ground 10 yards behind him and spun like a lopsided top. Jack holstered his pistol, stepped over to the horses, and swung up in the saddle.
Get him, boys!
Bull! Get him your damn self! Do we look crazy?
Daddy, he tore my gun up! And my hat! My hand! Daddy, damn it! Look at my hand!
I trotted Buck cautiously over to Rhodes Blanchard.
I kept the cowboys and young Blanchard in the corner of my eye as I spoke down to the old man.
I'm sorry this rolled out of control. I truly am. We rode in here with the most honest intentions.
I just thank you, Mr. Kelly, or whoever you are. Thank you both for not killing him.
Over to the side, two of the cowhands wrapped a bandana around young Blanchard's hand and led him toward the wagon. He stared back over his shoulder at Jack. Jack sat with his arms crossed on his saddle horn. His face was blank.
I'll kill you! Hear me, you bastard! I'll kill you!
Turn him around, Mr. Blanchard. Get the nonsense out of his head and turn him around while there's still time.
I waved an arm between Jack and myself. Or this is what you'll raise. I was a year or more getting over what happened in Northfield. Even longer getting over Janine. I should say getting over her again, since I'd gone for years accepting the fact that she was lost to me forever. Cousin Jesse always had his chest wound that never completely healed. I reckon my love for Jeannie was sort of like that. No sooner had we got back from Minnesota, I moved Little China and our belongings 20 miles deeper into the woods. At first, I started to move over to my spread in Kentucky, but as long as Zanone was alive, I figured he would stay on my trail. When I made the move to my horse farm, I wanted no ill wind blowing at my back. Besides, I'd sworn to kill him. I just hadn't yet found the chance. When China and I went deeper into the woods, I gave my old spread to Jack and the crazy widow woman. I only did it out of friendship, because I knew that, like myself, Jack needed a place to put down some kind of roots. As it turned out, giving Jack the house and land was one of the smartest things I ever did. When Zanone's men finally found out about the place, they showed up ready to draw blood, but since nobody ever recognized Jack Smith from anything he'd ever done, he pointed them all the way to Creed, Colorado in search of Miller Crow. It worked. Though Zanone never showed up face to face, he actually sent Jack a letter thanking him for his cooperation. I never saw anything like it. Later, I found out that Cole Younger was sent to Stillwater State Penitentiary for a bunch of years. According to a Minnesota newspaper, when the judge asked Cole if he had anything to say, Cole just smiled and thanked him for his time. At first, we were all surprised they didn't try to hang old Cole. But when we saw he had a chance at staying alive, we sent money to his lawyer to help him out. I always thought some of the money found its way to the judge because Cole never told them a damn thing to implicate the rest of us, yet leniency was granted based on his cooperation.
You must think a lot of that animal, brushing him like that while you're on the trail.
Holding Buck's reins in one hand, I ran the brush down his neck with my other.
This old boy is like family to me. He's like the son I never had.
That's real touching. I promise I'll take good care of him, Mr. Crow.
I turned around slowly.
My name's Beatty. You're making a mistake.
The man talking to me was dressed like a banker in a dark suit and silk rolled tie. He'd rode up in a fine buggy asking directions.
Yeah.
Now he stepped down from his seat with a .44 aimed at me and pitched a bucket on the ground between us.
That's what they always say.
You a lawman?
Bounty man.
You're going to a lot of trouble for nothing. I ain't Crow, and you'll put in a lot of time and expense taking me in just to find out. Besides, everybody knows Crow died
Shut
over...
Shut up, Crow. I know who you are.
Look, mister, I got money. How much bounty are we talking about? I can match it. More than match it. Think of it. You won't even have to bother taking me to jail.
You ain't going to jail, Crow. This is a personal job for Big Dan Zanone. And I'll have no expenses. That's what the bucket is for.
Bucket? For what?
I'm going to pack your head in a bucket of mud and go sit it on Zanone's desk.
I can't explain what his words and laughter did to my mind. But something dark and ugly exploded inside me. As I dropped and kicked backwards, rolling under Buck and snatching my knife from my boot, the man hit Buck with a shot from his .44. Then a second shot tore into Buck's neck. As he was falling, I drew back my arm and snapped it forward like a whip. The bounty hunter staggered back with a knife in his shoulder. Before he could recover, I pushed him into the fork of a double-boughed tree.
Killed my horse!
I quickly snatched up a rock and beat his head with it.
Hack my head! Kill my horse!
Yes.
An unknown time later, as I was puking into the creek, Jack walked up beside me.
I saw old Three Finger Ferguson's brain sliding down that tree trunk. Whoo-wee, that had to hurt.
You knew him?
I recognized his hand. You didn't leave much else.
He killed Buck.
I know, and I'm sorry. Ferguson was a bad son of a bitch. You're lucky to be alive.
I dipped water in my hands and washed my face. Dark blood grew thin in the water and swirled away.
He was gonna cut my head off and pack it in mud.
No joke. I saw the bucket. You reckon it would have fit?
Jack, this ain't funny. I'm sick of this miserable life. That son of a bitch killed Buck and was gonna pack my head?
Zenone?
Jack bent down beside me, took my knife from the ground, and started washing it in the creek. I couldn't answer. I just nodded. I was sick of this life. Sick of the hiding, the blood, and the killing. There was no end to it, it seemed. It would torment me forever.
You're right. This ain't funny no more.
Dick Liddell, Whiskey Ed Ryan, Charlie and Bob Ford, and Frank and myself, and you and Jack handling the horses.
I scratched at my beard and kicked a rock across the yard. I would have felt better if Frank had come with Jesse, but Frank had stayed in Tennessee, as he had been doing more and more lately.
Damn it, Jesse, let's look at what you got. Dick Liddell is a drunk and a braggart. Whiskey Ed is plumb out of his mind and has been since he got shot through the head, and I wouldn't trust the Ford brothers with a pet rattlesnake.
This is big, awfully big, cousin. You're going to talk about this for a long time.
It ain't feeling right. It didn't feel right in Northfield, and it ain't feeling right today.
You still holding Northfield against me?
I never held Northfield against you, Jesse. This just don't feel...
No, that's it. You're holding it over me just like everybody else. One time it goes wrong for me, and nobody lets me live it down.
That ain't it, Jesse.
Then why is it you haven't rode with us since then?
You haven't done nothing that big since Northfield. Nothing that required me and Jack setting up horses.
I see. You think I can't handle something big. Something without the Youngers and the Millers?
No, Jesse, you're not giving me a chance!
Don't raise your voice to me!
Jesse's right hand slapped firm around his pistol.
Jesse, I didn't mean to shout at you, I swear to God!
He stared at me, and I saw that his knuckles were wide on his pistol butt. If he drew, I'd have to try and throw down on him for whatever good it would do me. Finally, he eased up a little.
This is it for you, cousin. Miss this one, and you better never show your face around the boys again.
As Jesse rode out into the woods, I swung up on my red gelding and headed in the other direction. I went around with a lot on my mind for the next couple of weeks. I hated turning Jesse down. If something went wrong on the job, especially if it involved horses, I would never be able to live with myself. At the same time, I could no longer justify taking money from people who needed it a damn sight more than I did. After Northfield, I'd decided to drop out of the robbing business. I had a good string of horses at any time and could make more than just a living traveling the auction circuit. And that didn't include my racing stock, nor the money I still had stashed in a dozen different places. Robbing no longer made sense. I stopped by Frank's place in Clear Creek, Tennessee on my way back from the big Nashville auction. Frank looked past my shoulder real cautious as he asked me into his house, and all the while I was there, he seemed anxious and preoccupied. This wasn't the Frank James I'd known over the years. When I told him about my confrontation with Jesse, he shook his head and stared at the floor as if ashamed for his brother's action.
I'm real sorry for that, and Jesse will be too once he comes to his senses. Lately, he's gone plumb out of his mind.
The bad dreams again? The dead men?
Only it's worse now. There's times he thinks some of his old enemies are still alive and out there undermining everything he tries to do.
Ain't there some way you can talk him out of this big job he's wanting to pull?
I've tried, believe me, he won't listen. If I press a little too hard, he claims I'm turning against him. Besides, judging the bunch he's wanting to ride with him, if I don't go along, I figure he's a dead man. So I reckon I'm in whether I like it or not.
I studied Frank's face a long time. I knew he wouldn't ask, since he knew I'd already decided against the big job, but I also knew he wanted me along. With Jack and I working with him, Frank must have figured we could at least keep an eye on the new man. There was big reward money on both Frank and Jesse, enough to tempt somebody like Dick Liddell or the Ford brothers. What could I do? I couldn't turn Frank down, and I couldn't just stand back and watch him or Jesse die. Not after all these years together. Well, I reckon you can count me and Quiet Jack in.
You sure, cousin?
Hell yes, I'm sure. Look, I don't know what's been bothering me, but if Jesse ain't too pissed off to let me, you know I'm going along. I always have.
I'll be putting out more corn come next spring. That's if the price still holds.
That's good, Frank. It's real good. My first night back home, as I lay in bed staring at the ceiling, little China came across the room in her white cotton gown and slipped atop me. She had a strange and pleasant look on her face. Taking my hands in hers, she ran them up under her gown, placing them firmly against her warm stomach. I smiled at her, then looked back toward the ceiling. Not right now. I'm thinking about something. She shook my hands firmly and rubbed them around on her stomach, forming a circle. I looked at her again and saw the warm glow in her eyes and about her cheeks. The same glow Janine had so many years ago. I held my hands real still as the realization set in.
A baby?
China smiled and slipped down beside me.
You hoppy?
Am I hoppy? Hoppy? Ah, yes, China. I'm very happy. Just tell him I'm going along. I'll meet him at the Samuel place and work out the details. Jack nodded and swung his horse toward St. Joseph, 3 miles down the road.
And Jack, don't leave me sitting here all day. I told China I'll be back by Tuesday.
Jack waved over his shoulder and disappeared out of the woods. I hadn't liked the idea of this big job of Jesse's from the outset. Now that I'd learned I was about to become a father, I liked it even less. I reckon some old memories of Janine and the baby we lost had something to do with my bad feelings. Whatever it was, I couldn't shake it. And I damn near prayed that something would come up to cause Jesse to change his mind. But I told Frank I would go along, so that was that. I sat on a stump in a small clearing with my horse tied beside me and a long-barreled shotgun across my lap. I thought back to the weeks on the Samuels farm when Frank, Jesse, and I fished for mudcats along Gittle Creek. We hadn't thought of ourselves as children then, but looking back, I realized that was all we were. We were kids in a troubled time. There were Frank and Jesse, guerrilla fighters. To the enemy, they were bad to the bone killers. But beside Gittle Creek, they were like schoolboys on a day off. I was a clear-browed country boy who had the misfortune of killing a young soldier in what, at any other time, would have been no more than a playground scuffle. Now, suddenly it came to me. I sat there dressed in a black linen suit, wearing a finely made bowler hat and a silk tie. I wore a doe-skin duster and boots cut from the best leather and gloves that would have cost a man more than 6 months' pay. I was dressed to suit affairs of state, and I sat on a stump in the woods with a loaded gun on my lap and two more concealed on my person. For whatever I thought I'd become in life, I realized it was of no matter. From the second the last breath left that young soldier's body, I'd been running and hiding deeper and deeper, losing myself in the darkened woods. I stood up that evening as Jack rode into the woods. His expression was strained, guarded, as if the devil had met him on the road and given him a message, and he was trying to remember the message word for word. At first, I thought he'd been shot, and I readied my shotgun before me, searching the woods in all directions. Jack! Are you all right?
Jesse's dead. It was a real nice thing. I think Jesse would be proud.
Fog swirled in a heavy mist. Quiet Jack, Whiskey Ed Ryan, and I sat atop our horses beside the Crossroad Inn in Kentucky and watched the road disappear into the gray veil.
I'm just sorry I couldn't attend.
I spotted three of Zanone's men hanging around like vultures.
Who is Daniel, by God, Zanone?
Shh.
Well, I've as much of this as I do of another.
In the 5 or 6 years I'd known Ed Ryan, I'd yet to hear him make any sense at all. His skull had stopped a .44 slug years back, and a bald spot on the side of his head pulsed like a soft spot on a newborn baby.
Howdy, Frank.
He reined his horse up beside us.
I extended my hand. Frank squeezed my hand as if reaching for strength. The inn was empty except for the bartender and an old man with a white beard. We sat at a table in the shadows of a far corner drinking a bottle of rye with four glasses.
I gotta know one thing. Did Jesse die holding any ill feelings toward me?
Jesse was pleased. Proud as a rooster when I told him you changed your mind and were coming with us. Your family, cousin. Always was. Always will be.
I tossed back the shot of rye and stared at the empty glass on the table.
Thanks, Frank. That helps. A lot.
Here's to him, and to every damn body else.
We stared at Ed as he nodded. Frank glanced away and shook his head. I looked up at Jack and nodded toward the stockroom behind him.
Come here, Ed. I want to show you something.
On their way into the stockroom, Jack reached over and picked up a heavy iron poker from against the wall.
How's Ma and Z and the kids holding up?
As well as they can. It ain't helping that Bob Ford is bragging about the details to any damn newspaper that'll listen.
Son of a bitch. I swear to you, Frank, he won't brag after I lift him up on my Glades knife.
Jack stepped out of the stockroom and pitched the bent poker over on the woodpile in the corner.
No, I don't want you making a move on Bob Ford. That's why I called us together tonight. We need to talk about some things.
Hearing Frank's words, Jack turned to walk toward the bar.
Hold up, Jack. This concerns you as well.
I'm sorry for Whiskey Ed. He wasn't acting that bad when he met up with us. And since Jesse had brought him in, well, I just figured, well, you know.
I understand. It's just that kind of decision on Jesse's part that got him killed, as far as I'm concerned. He'd taken to drawing in people from outside our circle. Yeah, no matter now, I reckon.
Jack and I glanced at each other. After a few awkward seconds of silence, Frank looked up between me and Jack.
There's no point in me beating around the bush. I'm going in. I've had my lawyer talking to the governor for me, and I'm turning myself in next week.
What about Ford? We can't let it lay.
For now, we can. Jesse's dead. Ford will keep. Till the time comes. Right now, I need this scummy bastard doing just what he's doing, shooting off his mouth. That's worth more public sympathy than I could buy for $1 million. But if he dies, they'll swear it's coming from me, and that could swing folks the other way. I thought it out, and I need you to go along with me on this. After I'm sentenced or released, he'll die. That's a fact.
Sentenced or released? Hell, Frank, they've got enough to hang you.
I don't think so. Neither does my lawyer. Now listen, you might not like what you'll hear in the papers. My lawyer's gonna play it like I was just a blind follower. Jesse's weak-willed older brother that just didn't realize when the war was over. I got a good record of service in the regular Southern Forces back before I ever joined up with Quantrill. We're going to make my surrender look like the last tired soldier coming in from the battle.
Jesus, Frank, that's exactly what it is.
God bless you, Jack Smith. And God bless you, Justin Nash.
This was the first and only time Frank had called me by my real name. I worked it over in my mind while Jack and I rode back across Arkansas. It was time for me to take Little China and clear out to Kentucky. I wanted to see our baby born in a new place, a bright and cheerful place where sunlight spilled through the window of a morning and we would never again worry about waking to the sound of rifles. I wanted time, free, untroubled time, where I could play with my baby and love Little China without fearing that it might all end at any second. When we reached the crossroad that led back to Jack's place, it was well past midnight, and I still had another 20 miles to go.
So, Frank is hanging it up, and so are you.
Jack, you're welcome to come along and bring the widow with you.
You really were something, you know.
I reckon so. I hope Frank knows what he's doing.
He always has. I hope you know what you're doing.
What do you mean?
Zanone.
Jack turned and looked at me seriously.
He'll never give up until one of you kills the other.
Well, that's probably true, but I gotta chance it. Now that Jesse is dead and Frank is going in, I'm gonna try and let things end. If Zanone don't come looking, maybe I can give up killing him.
I turned my horse slowly and started down the road. I knew I would be breaking my sworn oath to old Cletus Avery's spirit by giving up my vengeance on Zanone, but if I was to ever find peace, I would have to stop and change all of a sudden. There's no tapering off when it comes to taking on a new life. You either do it or you don't. I hoped old Cletus would understand. I stopped a half mile from the house and took the box of candy and bottle of lilac ambrosia perfume from my saddlebags. I wiped the road dust from the box of candy and rubbed the little purple perfume bottle on my duster sleeve to make it shine. Part of my changing would be the way I was going to treat little China from now on. I'd always treated her well, but I'm ashamed to admit that I'd never treated her the way a man should treat a special woman. I reckon, because she'd never required the attention of a proper lady, I'd never gone out of my way to show it to her. I stopped at the edge of the woods overlooking our cabin in the valley. I sat there a few minutes with the presents on my lap, watching a lazy sliver of smoke curl in the silver mist at dawn. As much as I looked forward to our new lives in Kentucky, this little spread would always hold a warm and special place inside me. I heeled my horse forward down the trail into the valley. China would be sleeping. I would slip in quietly and under the covers. Halfway across the front yard, I caught sight of the water bucket lying empty in the dirt beside the well, and I froze. I stared at the porch and saw a chicken, then another. They were drifting in and out through the open door. I remember sliding from the saddle and drawing my rifle from the scabbard. Had someone been waiting inside for me, they would have started firing as I crossed the yard. Somewhere in my mind, I knew what awaited me inside the house. I must have crept slowly in order to prepare myself for it. I recall my hands trembling and my knees being numb and weak as I stepped up on the porch.
Hold on. Just hold on.
I tried to brace myself against what I would find beyond the open door. But nothing could have prepared me for the sight of little China, hanging from the rafters, with my Glades knife stuck through her heart.